Welcome to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast,
your source for everything outdoors.
Let's kick it into overdrive.
Overdrive Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Predator Hunter Outdoors. Whether you are new to predator hunting or looking to upgrade your equipment, Predator Hunter Outdoors will have you hunting after the sun goes down. Carrying a full line of lights, night vision, and thermal optics, along with tripods, calls, mounting systems, and more, check them out at www.predatorhunteroutdoors.com or on Facebook at Predator Hunter Outdoors. Use promo code OVERDRIVE2021 for 20% off your order.
All right, so tonight I've got my brother and sister-in-law, Kate and Clint, with Sandy the Tracker here with me. They have been on a whole heck of a lot of deer recoveries with me, as well as deer hunts. How we doing?
Good.
Great.
Good. Trying to stay dry from all this rain.
Yeah, we have gotten absolutely dumped on with rain. In the last 24 or 48 hours, it's been pretty much raining every day. But I know you guys got out to check some trail cameras the other day.
Wednesday. Was it Wednesday? No, it was yesterday. Thursday. Yep.
And yeah. I saw some exciting stuff.
Well, it's a buck we've had on camera for we're pretty sure it goes back 5 years. We're pretty sure we can get him back to 5 years as far as pictures that we've had with him. And he's one of those bucks that he'll show up two or three times a year, and you see him. I've never seen him in the stand. There's one time I might have seen him in a stand, but I don't, you know, it's one of those things where, man, that looks like him, but it was just a quick glance, and I couldn't see him again. But we've had him on camera. We had him on camera in January of this year. Oh, no, excuse me, that was the year before. That would have been 2020, beginning of 2020. We had him in January, so we knew he made it through the year. Well, this picture we got on Thursday, he's still a 10. He doesn't have...
He's been a 10 the last...
3 years.
3 years,
I know for sure.
Least.
And he's got... I mean, I ain't going to say any measurements because, I mean, you're looking at a picture and I'm not
he's
the great...
He's a big buck.
He's a big buck. I mean, I guarantee you, last year, the picture we had of him, he was probably grossing close to 170s. And
yeah,
and it was a typical big, I mean, just a big deer. Granted, we hunt private. I mean, I don't always hunt private, but we have private property that we can hunt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing that's hard is you have your stands that are, you know, moving them is not... feasible.
Well, that's kind of a good segue into pretty much what we wanted to talk about tonight was running gun hunting. How long, I mean, anybody that follows a page knows that I've gone running gun, what year did I lose my lease? 16?
Yeah.
You guys hunted that lease with me quite a bit.
Yep.
I think I lost that in 17. 2017 was the first year that I could not hunt that 38-acre patch. And I told you guys, I told everybody that needs to know, I'm selling everything I got. On 38 acres, what did I have, 16 tree stands? Because every tree had a double set in it for video, mostly. So I had 16 tree stands on 38 acres. And going from private to public, the only way that I could see it feasible to not lose tree stands or sticks all the time.
Because we've all lost stuff on state land.
And I continue to do so. I lost a trail camera 2 years ago on a scrape that I had been hunting for, I don't know, 3 years, I think.
Yep.
And, you know, that's what I really wanted to talk to you tonight, Clint, about. For anybody that doesn't know, Kate and Clint are with Sandy the Tracker, which you guys go ahead and describe who Sandy the Tracker is, what you do.
Sandy is a 9-year-old plot walker mix. She has a damn good cold nose, which if you don't know, cold nose means that if it's an old, old trail, she can smell it. She basically will, if it's dead, she'll find it. I mean,
that dog will find a deer.
And I can say that we have, I've not gotten a call where somebody has said, hey, I found my deer, your dog didn't find it, basically. So she's a good dog. She's been doing it for, well, since she was 6 months old. So, I mean, and we do probably, you know, I couldn't even tell you how many we track a year.
A lot.
I know we do a lot. And
you,
during,
you guys lose out on a whole lot.
I don't get to hunt a lot. I mean, at all. And, I mean, I try to get out as much as I can. But for the most part, I mean, we're from usually the last week of October all the way till last year. It was stayed pretty busy all the way till almost December. We stayed, I mean, we're, there was days that we did four tracks a day. And granted, we try to kind of limit those tracks just because of the simple fact that, you know, you don't want your, if it's an easy track, I don't mind putting our dog on a couple tracks a day or three or four. If it's like a 15, 20 minute track, I'm fine with it. But there's some tracks you get to that you're there for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And, but, and we're pretty,
a few of them with me.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's kind of what she does. I mean, and that's what Sandy the Tracker is. And Kate's the one that, you know, did the training and kind of got us into it. We kind of fell into it, and we both like to hunt. And to say we don't hunt much anymore, we mostly do a lot of tracking. We do get deer here and there, but most of the time it's, we're recovering deer for Josh. I mean, no.
Do you at all regret starting a, or having a tracking hound while also wanting to be a hunter?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. No.
It is so rewarding for us
to see that hunter's face when we find a deer that he was guilt-stricken, just, I mean, like, devastated because he thought he lost this deer. And we come out there and we find this deer. And, I mean, there's, it's a reward that you don't get back. So, yeah, we do get paid for it, but in the same sense, we try to make it reasonable so that everybody is happy on the out, you know, because there's people out there that do charge quite a bit, but we try to stay reasonable for the average hunter because hunting is not cheap. I mean, when you're paying $10 for an arrow and then you got a broadhead to go on the end of it, you know, I mean, and then everything else that goes into it. So, you know, but we really enjoy it. I mean, I like to hunt, but that's why when I try to hunt, I try to make my hunts the I'm not even going to get into
as that. Worthy as possible.
Yes,
you
exactly.
You have to make sure it is worth your time.
Yes.
When you have the little bit of time to spend.
Yes, exactly. And now I'm not saying that a 3-point isn't worth my time or a doe isn't worth my time because that's what I shot last year. I shot a doe. Yeah. And, I mean, she came in and I was like, hey, I got the time. I'm going to, you know, so. But there's plenty of times I'm in a tree stand and people are like, hey, are you available? I'm like, yeah, I guess. I ain't seen any deer, so. So.
Well, I wanted to talk a lot about our run and gun hunting because you and I have kind of gotten together in the last 2 years-ish. We've known each other for, I don't even know how long you guys have been together.
10 years.
So we've known each other for 10 years, and we didn't ever really do a lot of hunting together. Now we live closer. Our schedules sometimes match up.
Yep.
There's a lot of days where I will message you or you will message me, or we'll call each other and we'll say, what are you doing tonight?
Going hunting.
Let's go hunt.
Yep.
And, you know, for me to be, I lease 38 acres. You guys hunted that with me quite often.
Yep.
The choice between tree stands, you always had one choice.
Yep.
I mean, one out of, at that point, eight different sets.
Yes.
But that was where you're going to hunt.
Yep.
We saw deer.
Yep.
We saw a lot of deer. But were we always in the right position?
No, not always.
A lot of times.
A lot of times you could see them, but they were just right out of range.
Yep. And, you know, when I went to public, I said, I'm going to sell it all, and I'm just going to buy one good setup. And I ended up going with a Lone Wolf Assault 2 with four sticks. I bought their Ready to Hunt package, which was four sticks, stick quiver,
yep,
and the tree stand.
Yep.
What did you end up going with?
I ended up going with the XOP with the four sticks on it, and I picked that up last year because I always was a climber. I always had a climber, but in that sense, you're limited on what tree you can pick.
Yeah.
So, and I like mine. It's a little heavy, but hey, it works for right now.
Yeah, and with me, you know, my first year, like I said, was 2017. And I wanted to run gun hunt at that point strictly because if I took my stuff with me every time, I wasn't going to go back to that tree and find out that somebody else had found it before I had gotten back there. And that is what drew me to the run and gun hunting. I wanted one good setup that I could feel comfortable in. I could hang quickly, hunt whatever area I wanted.
But yeah, because you're just like, you can walk out there, you know where to go. But it, like I said, I mean, you know, I'd seen what you had been doing with your run and gun. And that is something that I think as a lot of hunters that do hunt private land or even hunt state land in the same spot every year, that you lose that luster of, yeah, you want to go hunting and you want to experience that, but it is so much more fun to take a stand and walk it out in the woods into a section of woods that you've, whether you've seen it on a map, you know, hunt wise, or and look and say, okay, this looks pretty decent, you know, it looks, you know, whatever your reasoning might be for that, and set up there and then have success. Because when you're on that private land, you know how the deer move. And they don't, granted, they don't always move exactly, but I mean, they have the routines. And when you go to do that on public land where everybody else is doing it, it is just, it's rewarding. It is. And I seen you doing that, and that's kind of, yeah, I jumped on the bandwagon, I guess you could say, and I got it. And I'm not disappointed that I did, because I've seen...
Well, with your climber, you were so limited.
Yes, like Kate said, I was.
We had hunted a couple times on public that you used to have access to private that butted up to it. We always surpassed that private land to go hunt the public.
Public, yeah.
But with a, what did you have for a climber?
I had the Summit open shot. I had the Summit open shot.
Which is an open front, so you didn't have a front bar or anything around it. And you hunted a lot of public that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
The difference between me and you at that point was
yeah,
you might be 20 yards too far from the trail or from the area that you want to hunt because of
one limb. But yeah, like you said, I mean, when
you had to hunt in a climber, because I've done it before too,
yep,
in a straight limbless tree.
Yep.
Which means no cover.
Yep.
And what I've found in the last 4 years of hunting, 5 years of hunting this way, I believe that the more important part is the cover that you can keep yourself in. And you might only need to hang one stick and then start climbing
a couple branches.
Branches.
Yep.
Well, if you've got branches underneath you that you're climbing up and you can get your stand into a little nook of it, you have bottom cover.
Yep.
You have cover surrounding you. So, yeah, I want to get into the story of my 12-point.
What 12-point? I don't remember a 12-point.
That miracle 12-point.
Yes, it was.
That I thought was an 8-point when I shot him. That particular hunt shows very, very important aspects of being able to read a map.
Yeah.
And using the proper setup for your area.
Yeah.
Now, with reading a map, I'm talking looking at hunt-wise and picking out the topography and learning where to set up. Now, you take it from there because Clint is the one who picked this spot.
Well,
based on maps.
Yeah. And the thing is, I grew up in the area where we hunted that time, or where we hunted, and I knew the area. I hunted it a little bit when I was younger because I wasn't, you know, I wasn't into hunting like I am now. And me and Josh had left. I picked him up or I came over here. I can't remember, but we both were on our way.
We met at my house.
Yes, and we had planned on, Josh had mentioned something about some private land, and then there was state land behind it. Well, that's where we were originally going to go.
Yeah.
And we got to cruising, and he was driving, and I'm just looking at the map, and I'm like, you know, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, man, I really think we should try over here. And the way, I'm trying not to give this or where we hunt away, but anyways, it was by this river, and you could see where the river kind of cut in really, really hard, and you knew it was a steep embankment, and I knew the deer would be down in there on each side of that, and I knew they would have to be forced up
to based on the topography.
So, anyways, I'm having issues saying that word right there.
Topography.
There we go. Anyways, sorry, but and you could see it, and on the map there was this little sliver. Once you got up on top, that it was like a little plateau, and you could see it on the map plain as day. It was like a little low spot.
Plain as day. However, it's taken us a long time to learn this.
Yes, it has. It's don't think that we're just we can look at there's deer right there.
Yeah,
no,
I can't
no,
do that.
It's not like that. It's just what I looked at and what I seen. I was like, well, it just kind of I had an epiphany because I seen where the river was pushing the deer. Essentially pushed the deer up to the top, and I was like, well, if we set up around that, and our wind was right, so we're going over there. I'm like, Josh, take a right here.
And we did.
We took a right.
It was 2 seconds before this corner, and he says, let's try down here instead.
I was like, right.
So I slammed on the brakes and took a hard turn.
And we go down there, and the first parking where we're going to park, there was trucks parked in there. There was people out there. So we kind of, I was like, well, I know there's another parking up here a little way. So we go up there, we get parked, and we're both kind of looking at our maps. And we're looking, and I'm like, look, this is kind of where I'm thinking. So we end up, we parked way too far away. But all in all, it turned out good because we ended up walking up the road like a half a mile.
We walked quite a long way.
And it was quiet as a church mouse out there.
And this was an oak stand.
Yes, it was an oak stand. We get back to where I see this little...
On the topography, we had seen, basically, when you have the high altitude line,
yeah,
you will have almost a horseshoe shape,
yeah,
in it. And that indicates a low valley through, yeah, that high point.
Yeah, and that's what we've seen on the map.
Two of them.
Together. Right on each side of each other. Well, there was a high point, and then on each side of it was low. Well, we get out there, and granted, we're walking through, it was all oaks out to
loud.
It.
Loud.
Loud. I mean, it was louder, and we were seeing.
I think I had told you on the way in, there's no way we're going to get in here and see any deer because they're all hearing us coming in.
Well, on the way in, we started seeing, like, little twigs torn up.
Twigs.
Like smaller than my pinky torn up. So we're walking in. Well, all of a sudden we get to where we're expecting this little low point there. And sure enough, we see it. And then you can see there's a little poplar grove up here.
Basically what you have is almost a ditch.
Yeah, it's basically what it was.
Through the terrain.
Yeah.
And those ditches, quote unquote, on a topography map will show up as a almost horseshoe shape.
Yep, horseshoe shape.
It shows a drop in the terrain in a small area.
Yep.
And those spots,
and it was right on the corner of where the deer got pushed up off the river.
Yes.
And that's exactly where it was. Well, so we walk in and we're playing the wind. The wind was little to none. I mean, it was like maybe 2 or 3 miles an hour, if that. So we get out there, and Josh, we get right to this little low spot, and Josh is like, well, this looks pretty good. I'm going to sit up here. And it was right, I mean, he was sitting on the other side of the ditch, you could call it. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go a little bit closer to the drop-off.
I believe they call them saddles.
Saddles, if you want to call it. I don't know the technical term for it.
Me neither. I just know what to look for. Anymore.
Exactly. So anyway, so I go, Josh is like, I'm going to set up over here. So
in my area that I had stopped, based on the sign we saw,
yeah, And granted, this was not a lot of sign.
There was not much sign. There was pinky-sized rubs and torn up leaves showing deer had been in the acorns.
Yep.
That is the only thing that we saw. And we were probably 3/4 mile into the walk at that point.
Yep.
And to be honest, a lot of me setting up there was I just wasn't going to walk any farther. I was finally starting to see some kind of sign of deer, and I wasn't going to go any farther. I believe with a run-and-gun setup, you don't always want to go where the sign is the heaviest.
Yeah.
Because if you walk past all of what originally starts to look good, you might be walking past everything you need to be in.
Yeah. You might be walking too far into it.
So I said, Clint, this is where I'm going to set up. I'm going to set up on, I believe, gosh, what did we have? Probably a north wind if we were going in there to hunt them off the river.
Yeah, it was coming out of the north.
So I said, this is where I'm going to set up.
Yeah.
And you continued walking.
Yeah, I just walked probably another, I was straight line from you. I was probably 85 yards, maybe
over
90.
Over the ridge.
Over the ridge on the other
down
side.
Down the next saddle.
Next saddle. And I set up, and we get set up, and the wind, I mean, it's quiet. I mean, it's so quiet.
Now, with where we had set up, what are the odds you were setting up anywhere near where we were in a climber?
Little to none. There was
because of the oaks.
Because of the oaks. There was, I mean, there was really no trees in there that you probably could have found one or two, but getting into them was like, it would have been, it would have been a lot harder if you were in a climber, but put it that way. I was glad because, I mean, I only got 3 sticks up when I got over there.
I only got 2 sticks up.
Yeah. And so I'm sitting there and Josh is like, text me. He's like, so when the deer show up?
We got there at 4:30.
4:30,
I believe is when we set up. And this is October 30th, day before Halloween.
Yep, it was.
Just bluebird day, high pressure.
Yep.
And we both texted each other and said we need to go hunting.
Yep.
We both had enough time to go in. And at that point, it was getting dark at 6:30.
Yeah, close to 7. Yeah.
And we didn't get out there until 4:30.
Yep. We were a little later than we wanted to be.
Yep.
But we were like, we're here, let's just do it.
Yep.
So.
And, I texted you at like 5 minutes after getting set up.
Set up, yep.
What time did the deer show up?
And no sooner than that, that's when he's like, big buck. And I'm like, where?
We could pretty much, I mean, if the foliage was down, we probably could have seen each other at that point.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You were just over the saddle from me.
Yeah.
I was 8 feet high, 10 feet high.
You could reach your stand from the ground.
Yes, so I was very low.
Yeah.
But it was about 5 o'clock. We got set up 4:30. About 5 o'clock, I heard rustling to my left, and with how quiet it was, I assumed squirrel. And I looked over, and I said, oh, that's a deer right there. And it was probably, at that point, inside of 100 yards from me, but it was bedded just on top of the ridge before it dropped down to the bottom.
Yep.
Which was the swamp bed.
Yep.
Looked through my binoculars, and he had thrown his head up to, I assume, lick a branch at this point. I thought it was originally eating out of it. Threw its head up, and I said, oh.
Big buck.
That's not a doe.
And I heard you grunt.
We were set up perfectly where that deer was getting either an arrow one way or the other.
Yeah, he was either going to get it from me or you.
Unless it would have gone to the river.
Yeah.
But at that point, it had no reason to go to the river. There was nothing in the riverbed for it.
Nope.
The oaks and the acorns were all where we were, and we were set up right on the edge of it.
Yeah.
As soon as that deer gets my heart going, that's when I make my decision.
Yep.
I am not one to say, wait for a four-year-old. I'm not one to say, eight-pointer bigger. I just like I've told my kids, if it gets your heart racing and you want to kill that deer, you kill it.
Because that's what it's about. I mean, it's
exactly. It is an adrenaline rush like you wouldn't believe. Yeah. And I got that Timber Freak grunt call out. Made a couple estrus bleats, and then I snort wheezed at him with my mouth. and I turned that timber freak grunt back to young buck, and I snort wheezed at him, and I young buck grunted at him two or three times. And there's something about watching a deer and how he acts. This buck was kind of walking around the ridge slowly, you know, feeding. But he was also at the same time kind of rubbing on some trees a little lightly and tearing up the ground a little bit. And
because, I mean, we're at pre-rut.
But that deer was acting like he was an aggressive deer by thrashing the ground, rubbing a couple trees. And he hadn't rubbed anything big. But after I grunted and snort wheezed at him, he walked up. I wish we would have gone to that tree that he ripped up because it was a big tree. I watched him rip that tree up. I watched him scrape the ground. And that automatically told me this is an aggressive deer. He's not scared by the grunting. He's not scared by any of the snort wheezing. He's getting more and more angry about it. October 30th is about the perfect time to start hitting them with that.
Yeah.
That's when they start,
they're responding to it. Cruising,
looking for that first available doe.
In our area.
In our area, yep. And he turned our direction, but he split the ridge.
Yeah.
Instead of walking in the bottom,
he walked up on top of it.
The top of that ridge. I always believed that deer would walk the lower edge of it. The top, in my opinion, and I'm not a deer, would put them more vulnerable.
Yeah. But so I learned, probably wanted to be seen, being that
he was the dominant deer in that spot.
Deer, yeah.
He walked above us. And at that point, he couldn't have been 40, 50 yards from you.
Yeah. I could hear him, but I couldn't see him.
And he was 38 yards from me.
Yeah.
So part of the big thing that I like about run and gunning, especially with another person, and we have plans already for year in a spot that I'm running trail cameras, we're going to line that edge with a couple run and gunners. One of us will shoot a buck.
Yep.
We're going to just space this out a little bit. But we set the spot up where if the foliage was down, we would have been in eyesight of each other.
Yep.
And you would have seen Law go down. So this buck splits the ridge. He cuts the top of the ridge, walks up, and for anybody that hasn't seen this buck, if you look on our YouTube, it is a stud surprise 12 point. This buck came in so aggressively, he was trying to get my wind the whole time.
But he would have had to go way down there.
He would have died by you.
Yeah, he would have came down by me if he was going to try to get your wind.
Correct.
And that's kind of what he was.
He was headed that way.
And I can hear him coming my way. Well, all of a sudden, he kind of.
Now, remember, this is also dead quiet night.
Yes, I mean, like, you could hear a church fart. Could have heard a mouse fart out there. It was so quiet. I mean,
and
I think
I posted on our Facebook page, I hate these kind of nights.
Yeah.
How are you getting in anywhere without being noticed?
Yeah. So he's splitting this ridge. Well, I can hear him coming my way. Well, I don't know if it was just too far for him and he didn't want to go any further, but
he got to a certain point where he
was just like, yeah, he's like, no. And he kind of
didn't see the deer.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. Well, at that time, I keep hearing this walking, mind you, and I'll let you finish your side. But I hear this walking, and then all of a sudden, I hear what I think is a phew, and I'm like, you just shot him, didn't you? This is what I said. Go ahead, Josh.
So, he busted me three different times, I think. I drew back two different times on him. The second time is when I ended up finally drilling him. But he split between you and I, almost where you had walked.
Yep.
I mean, you had walked a little bit farther south of where he stopped.
I kind of circled around to where I sat up.
But this buck stopped where he could see everything that he could hear, I believe, because he knew where that sound was coming from, and he walked above it, and if he couldn't see it, he knew something was wrong. That deer stood between you and me at probably roughly 45 yards between both of us at that point, and stood there for 2 minutes. And he stared at me because I was only two sticks high.
Yep.
I had a lot of cover, though. And he finally flicks his tail. He turned around to walk back the other way and head down a lane that I had already ranged at 38 yards. And I drew back my bow, and it was quiet enough that in the video you hear, I don't know if you hear my coat sleeve or something rubbing on the tree, and he stopped again because he heard it. That's how quiet this was.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how long I was drawn back. It probably was close to 30 seconds or a minute, yeah. And his tail flicks again. And I knew he was going to step, and I... And you could see me in the video kind of standing up taller
trying
and
to get
slinking
that,
down,
get that
just
hole.
Trying to get the right angle. And I ended up settling the pin, 38 yards, and I squeezed the trigger on my release, and you heard it.
Yeah, I heard it.
Ultimately, when I first squeezed that release and let that arrow fly, his reaction scared me. And I watched that back in video. We watched it a couple times that night.
Yeah.
It looked like I had hit him back. So we went back, I don't know, 3 hours after the shot, I believe. We waited for Kate to show up with Sandy.
Yeah.
We waited for my brother Joe to show up to help. And, well, you know, I think it was about an hour after I shot. We were still up in the stand, and I had told you, I said, I need to get down.
It was getting dark.
To
so,
find where I hit this deer.
Yeah.
But you, at that point.
Yeah, I just said, well, just stay in the stand. I said, I'll get down, pack my stuff up. And, well, before that, I heard, I'm sitting there, and granted, this was like probably 40 minutes after you, I heard the shot. All of a sudden, I heard rustling. I said, did you get up and go look? And he's like, no. So I was like, well, I just heard something. Well, and about that time, I looked down because I could see down into the flat down there by the swamp or by the river. And I seen four or five does. I seen them running down in through there. And I'm like, okay, well, what the heck? And so I'm like,
which ultimately is a good reason of why that buck was there.
Yes, and that, yeah, exactly. Because, so needless to say, like Josh said, I need to get down and see where I hit him. You know, where I was in, if there's blood, whatnot, and all that. I said,
I was worried.
Yeah.
At this point.
And he got down, and you did ultimately find blood. So you're like, okay. So, and I think you took a picture of where you shot him.
Yeah,
and
I had threaded the needle.
It was a good shot. It was a good shot. I mean,
it was a tough shot, but I needed to make sure in daylight that I went to exactly where I knew he was, because after dark, that would have been a pain to find.
Yes.
Where he was.
Yeah.
It was just thick enough, and this wasn't a clear-cut area.
No.
This wasn't a very overgrown area. It was just, there was so many oaks growing everywhere that I had to pick a spot between the oak branches at 38 yards, about, yeah, like you said, the size of a softball basketball to thread the needle through it.
Well, and on the same note, right where he was where that poplar grove started.
Yep.
And if anybody's hunted poplars, they know how much they drop branches.
And they're thick.
And they're thick. And it was just really, he was right on the edge of where the oaks end and a hard line. He was right on that hard line.
Right on that transition.
That transition right there. And which I totally agree with him. You know, we need to find out where he was when you shot, you know. Because granted, we knew the video wasn't good because just you were trying to focus on the deer rather than...
I'm not to that stage yet. I'm not letting my biggest deer of my life walk away it's not on footage.
Yeah. No, and I understand that. So, I mean, because you don't hunt just for a trophy. You hunt for meat.
All right. And Clint was trying to talk me out of getting down.
Yes, because that's the way I am. And we've had...
Clint's a deer tracker.
Yes. We've had previous... I said, Josh... We own a dog, you know, so, and we get down. Well, actually, I packed up my stuff.
I got down first.
Yep,
and
you checked.
I went over there, and you were still watching them doze.
Yep.
At the bottom of the ridge.
Yep.
And He told me not to, but when I knew, Clint didn't know at that point what I had shot through. So Clint didn't really understand why I needed to get down so bad, and I didn't want to go track this deer. I wanted to go make sure I had a base starting point, and that's all I did. I had gotten down, walked up to this ridge, found where he was, and I think I had found the arrow, and I stuck it straight up in the dirt so we could find the red luminoc.
Yeah, because it was the front side with the broadhead that we found.
Yep, and that's all I wanted. But while I was walking up there, you messaged me again.
Yep. I said, did you just jump him? And that's what I said, because I heard, granted, these does are already down in the bottom.
So you're watching the deer that are, you know, are making noise.
Yes. And then all of a sudden I hear something over by Josh, and I know Josh was not going to make that much noise. Whatever it was ran, and I never seen it come down into the bottom, but I heard something run like what it sounded like it ran down by the river. So, and Josh is like, no, I didn't jump. I don't think I jumped him.
I didn't hear it.
Yeah. But
from
you
where
gotta,
I was.
But you had that saddle.
I was
so,
on the other side of the ridge.
Other side of the ridge, so you wouldn't have heard it. And come to find out, we were pretty sure that Josh shot him, and he was bedded up like probably 60 yards over the ridge, close to the drop-off down to the river. And when Josh came up there, I'm pretty, in my tracking opinion, as far as seeing a lot of wounded deer, I'm pretty sure he's seen you, and that's when he jumped up and ran down there.
Yeah, and after we had gone, I had gone and looked at the arrow, verified that I had blood. I think I went back and sat back up in the tree stand.
Yes, you did.
Roughly another half hour, 45 minutes.
Because you were in the tree stand when I came over with all my stuff.
You came up probably 20 minutes, a half hour before dark, and I told you right where to walk so that you would be on the area that he was, and we would mark that as well. Because if for whatever reason we were off, granted, I already had blood, but I like to start a track at the start of the track.
Yes.
And for Sandy,
that it always works well for us to do that too.
Right. Start at the arrow where it comes through it and where that first sign of fresh scent is.
Yes, exactly. Because that's when the adrenaline is pumping the hardest for that deer.
Yep.
Usually.
Well, that's usually where you have most of your scent for your dog to pick up, is because you're going to have hair. Obviously, we don't see that, you know, with your visible eye. But the dog has hair from, you know, the broadhead going through the deer. You got the blood, and then you usually have the arrow.
Yeah.
For the dog to go off of. So, impact sight is
critical.
Is ideal.
It is.
For us.
Yeah. Because it's the most, that's going to be the most scent for that dog to pick up. So
now, for me, I have a little bit of a benefit of having a tracking dog in the family.
Yep.
And at this point, we walked. Okay, so it's probably 20 minutes before dark.
Yep.
And we decided we were just going to unload all our stuff. We were going to pull all our stands. We were going to walk back to the vehicle. On the way out, we walk right past a guy who had been, he was just leaving as well, but we took a main access route. I don't like for run and gunning, I don't take main access routes very far. I take them to a certain point if it gets me to where I need to cut into the woods, but there's a lot of guys who get in their permanent stands on public land and they take the same entryway, they take the same exit way.
Yeah.
And if you go scouting during the postseason, you can find that. It's very easy in the snow to find where people have walked in and out of a tree stand over and over and over. And that is a benefit of run and gunning, because if I can pick that out, how easy is it for a deer to pick that
deer
out?
Walks by and be like, oh yeah, that's where that Joe walks by every day.
Yeah. And that for me is one huge thing with run and gunning, is you're never gonna know where I'm gonna be tomorrow, and you're never gonna know where I was yesterday.
Yeah.
Deer will.
Yeah.
Humans will not. And on public land, I feel that is important to, because a lot of times I'll find tree stands even while scouting, and they might be 40-year-old wooden 2x4 stands. But if that was a good spot at that point in time, that's probably a good spot now.
Somebody took the time to build that and put it in there.
Right.
You know.
And with run and gunning, nobody knows where we hunt.
Yeah.
You might find signs on the tree from where we hung our sticks or our stand. But other than that, you're not going to find our tree stand. You're not going to find our sticks. You're not. We don't leave any of the bright eyes tacks.
No.
We don't do any of that. Because a lot of the time when we go in, we've already scouted it. We've already kind of figured out. And I'm not to the point where I will figure out the exact kill tree yet, but I've figured out the area.
Where
and
you...
this spot, you figured out the area
yeah.
just based on topography.
Yep.
And so, anyways, we get, it was 3 hours after the shot, I believe.
Yep.
We walked back to the truck, and I didn't even get a decision. I heard Kate's on her way with the Sandy. My brother Joe's on the way. We're just going to wait a while. And it was probably another hour.
She made it pretty quick. It was about 45
minutes.
She was
in a hurry because yeah. she knew it was a big one.
Yeah. Well, we didn't, granted, we didn't know how big this deer was.
No, we didn't.
We Josh essentially thought it was an 8-point around there. But
at the point that I pulled, I hit the release, I just knew he was probably the biggest one I'd ever shot.
Yeah.
And that is my goal right now. I just want to keep improving.
Yeah.
Granted.
Hey.
A couple days later, I didn't improve much.
No.
But, anyways.
Want to lengthen your time in the field and shorten your scouting time? Not only does the HuntWise app show you property boundaries, landowners' names, and in some cases, even their phone number, but using the app will show you the wind direction on the map of the place you want to hunt. And the HuntCast feature shows peak movement times for various species, including predators. Get the HuntWise app at www.huntwise.com, the Google Play Store, or the Apple App Store. For only $59.99 a year for Pro or $119.99 a year for Elite. Use promo code OVERDRIVE20 for 20% off an annual membership.
We get... Man, what was it when Sandy finally showed up? Kate, it was probably 4 hours after the shot that you guys showed up.
It was close. It was 10 or so, right around
it was
there.
Dark. Yeah. Everybody had been gone. We had let that deer lay. We started Sandy right on about where I had hit her, as close as I could find.
Yeah.
And you guys go ahead because you know how Sandy works.
Yeah. Well, we go in there, and from everything that we've seen with what blood we had, it looked like a liver lung or in liver, out one lung. That's what it looked like to me. We had good blood, and there was quite a bit of blood starting off. I mean, from the first 90 yards, there was quite a bit of blood. And then you could see where I'm pretty sure he was bedded up, like I said earlier, where I was pretty sure he seen Josh and he jumped up and ran down.
Where we had originally talked about him asking me if I had jumped him.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't hear him, but he was on the downside of the ridge from
me. So he would have seen him before Josh would ever seen him. And there was a bunch of blood there. And then... which we've always found with deer, you know, that bed up, they tend to clog up a little bit.
Now, going back through my video footage, the little bit of video footage I had, we knew the shot was back, probably.
Yes, we knew it was back, but
quartered.
But it was quartered, so it was good. It was a good shot. But I also knew from my tracking experience, it needed time to die.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave it 4 hours, and I figured, man, it was liver into lung, and I was like,
It's always an iffy.
You can't. Every deer is different, and that's the thing that we found out with our tracking. But so I was confident in like, okay, let's go check, you know, and Josh was excited because, you know, he didn't know, he knew he shot a good buck, but he wasn't sure. And I was excited,
but I'm the excited that only a hunter can experience, because I was excited at the same time as
nervous
that I wounded this deer, and that's not what I want to do either.
Exactly, which nobody wants to. You want the deer to die quickly, and unfortunately with hunting, especially with bows, it doesn't always happen because these deer are so resilient. Like, you would not believe some of the deer that we have tracked that we have found still alive. And it's like, how? Oh,
yeah.
How are you still...
With the blood loss.
With the blood loss and just where it went, you know? Mm-hmm. But anyways, we get to tracking this deer. And Sandy, you know, she's doing her job. And we start to go down the hill down into the bottom of this river.
She started getting a little hot.
She started getting a little hot on us. And when I say hot, that means that...
She's getting a little excitable.
She's getting excitable, and my dog does not get hot unless she's on a live deer. And
what do you mean excitable?
Well, what we mean when we say excitable is they get a little bit fat. She gets fast-paced, and, I mean, you can... She's working her nose.
Her body language completely changes.
Yes, that's the best way to put it.
You can watch her pretty much on a trail where she's walking, sniffing, or mm-hmm. where she's pulling, sniffing.
Yes.
Yes, yep. That's pretty much what, I mean, excitable. She starts pulling you because she knows whatever's ahead is very, very alive. I mean, and that's what she tells me, because we've had deer that are dead that she's very calm.
Yeah.
Walks right up to
him. She's just like, oh, it's right there, Dad. You know, and that's the way she is.
Now, at what point did you realize that on my buck, we need to leave?
Probably.
When she started pulling
and we got to where that log was and we found that little dinky bit of blood.
Now.
You know what I'm talking about.
I think it's important for people to understand what we went through. Because we found three beds?
Yeah, there was three beds up top. Well, and then the one down, so there was four. There was three up top that he got up at least three times.
And then, but I feel like those were earlier.
Yes, those were earlier. Granted, those were earlier.
The blood that we had found in those first three beds was dry.
Yes.
Yes, and it was, there. And we're not talking about like a little puddle of blood. I mean, like, it was blankets.
Should have been dead there.
Yes, there was blankets of blood, I mean, up there. And then, like I said, after he got up out of that last one, there was very little going down that hill. And, I mean, that was a pretty steep hill. I mean,
yeah.
Well, we dragged that deer out there, so.
Yeah.
But we got down to the bottom, and we found where he had bedded up next to a log. And it was that...
Right on the river.
Right on the river. It was right where a creek ran into the river, and that pile of blood was maybe the size of like a 50-cent piece. It was not very big at all.
No.
There was hardly anything there, which is typical of a deer that's been bedded, but...
But now, see, this is where...
Josh gets nervous.
As the hunter, as the one... And it's not even about wanting to get that deer at that point. It's more about wanting to know the outcome.
Yep.
Because I don't want to wound a deer. I do not want to have to shoot a deer again if I don't have to. But at this point, its choices where that last bed had been was dive into the river or run across the creek. We chose that we were going to wade through that creek and see if he had gone back to higher ground that was dry.
Yeah.
And as soon as we got there...
We get over it. By the time... Me and Josh were the only ones over there. We get over it because...
This creek was knee-deep.
It was crotch-deep in a couple of spots. So, yeah. Well, me and Josh go across, and I bring Sandy, of course. And we get over there, and we're looking, and I'm not seeing much anything. But, in the same sense, my dog's telling me this is the way that he went. And I have found with doing this for as long as we have that you got to trust her, and you do. I mean... And sure enough, we get to looking and we find a little bit of blood down the side there. And once
on the other side of the creek.
On the other side of the creek.
On the high ground.
On the high ground. Now, granted, once we get up into that high ground, we realize that there's probably like, what, 3 or 4 inches of water? Hmm. And it's just, it's everywhere. So, see, and there's not really, it's not real tall.
There's a lot of puddles. This is an area that would typically swamp. It's probably flooded about right now.
Oh yeah, with the rain we've had, but there wasn't a lot of foliage on the ground, you know, for blood to drip on or anything. So there was water. So I was just going off what Sandy was telling me. Well, we start walking. Me and Josh are, and it was just me and Josh. I had everybody. The way I like to track is, well, the way me and Kate both like to track.
The least amount of people.
The least amount of people. You know, I usually like to leave everybody back, and it's just me and Sandy. But I knew Josh was excited, and he was nervous. He was really nervous, but she's not telling you that because...
No, I'm
not saying that you aren't. But I could tell because I've been around hunters, and he was concerned. He was concerned for the deer, and he was concerned that... the shot that he made wasn't as good as he thought it was. But in my experience of seeing what it was, I told him, I said, dude, this is a kill. It's a kill shot. This deer's going to be dead.
But
it's a matter of time. And that's the biggest thing. So we get over there, and Josh is to the left of me.
All we wanted to do at this point was confirm the direction that he went.
Yeah.
And we had already called the track at that point, yes. But we wanted to know if he was going to be floating down the river the next day.
Yes.
If he was going to be dead somewhere that we could recover him.
Yeah, because that was the biggest concern
Where
he was, because there was water all around him, and I knew if he got in the river...
He wasn't going to swim across it.
Because we've had one more other experience with a deer in a river, and it's not fun. But anyways... So that was our biggest thing. And I had already told Josh, I said, look, we need to call it. And he's like, oh, let's just... I was like, all right, we'll go across the creek. We went across the creek. We found that little bit of blood. And we use night snipe headlamps to track with the white LEDs. And they're great because you can see, like...
bright.
Yeah, people are... I use them on tracks and people are like, what light are you using? I said, look... this is where you can find them. You know, they're great lights. I love them because they're rechargeable.
They are bright.
And they are, like, you can see forever.
Headlamp has a spot for two batteries, but yeah. It will run off of one.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So two just makes it even brighter. Yeah.
So we get over there, and I'm tracking, and all of a sudden, Sandy's getting really, really hot. Like, she's pulling me. I mean, and for being a 40, she's just under 50 pounds. This dog...
what kind of dog is Sandy?
She is a plot walker mix. It's considered an X breed. She is registered, you know, all that. But damn good dog. I can go on and on about her. Just as a family dog and tracking dog, everything. But we get across this creek, and me and Josh are walking, and I'm like, man, I really wanted to pull back.
We hadn't found any blood.
I hadn't found any blood.
But Sandy was still
running
that way.
She was running hot, and it was just telling me, it's confirming with my own suspicions that this deer is still alive.
And guys, with anybody who's ever considered using a tracking dog, as hard as it is for me to say, the owner knows their dog.
If a tracker says, hey, look, your deer's not dead, you need to, there is people out there that run dogs that are just in it to make money, and they will lead you astray, but we're not like that. We want to find the deer just as bad as you do, so whether it be alive or dead, you know. So we get over there, and we're probably 50, 60 yards on the other side of this creek into the wetness.
Just where it's starting to open up.
Yeah, starting to open up, and there's huge trees down there. I mean, massive trees.
And still no blood.
So about that time, I'm scanning with my headlamp, and I'm looking back and forth, and I see some eyes way, way out there. I'm like, that's a deer. I'm like, man, I don't know if it's him. And I see it kind of bound to the right, and I'm like, no, that's not him. And about that time, I look over, and I was pretty sure it was Josh's deer. And it stands up and just kind of looks over at me.
And it wasn't very far away.
And it was probably 80 yards away. And from my experience with a big buck like that, they don't just get up and kind of casually look over at you and then start to walk away. Now, granted, I'm trying to keep my dog back because my dog sees this and she's like, Dad, that's what I'm looking for. So about that time, that's when Josh just, I think you just, I got you over there. I'm like, he's right there, Josh. And he just disappeared behind that tree.
He had taken off before I could see him.
But he didn't like run at all. Like, I mean, it was just a casual walk away. But I could, I've seen a lot of deer on their feet that have been shot through the liver. So I know how they walk. And I, plain as day, I could see it.
And it was a textbook liver
shot. Yeah, it was textbook.
Now, okay, so let's break in real quick. What? How do you know, as a deer tracking family, what does a liver shot deer do differently than a gut shot deer?
They have a raging gut ache, so they will walk hunched over. Like, almost as if, like, how a cat will hunch their back to defend themselves. Yeah. They will hunch their back and just kind of...
Gut shot or liver shot?
A little bit of both. I've seen it with both, but usually with liver, they usually like all those beds we found. That's usually what they do is they will try to find. They try to bed up really quick with a stomach, not always.
Right.
But it's just it just depends on the shot basically. But anyways, just the way he walked away and Josh seen his rear end and Josh is like, what? Josh's thing was is he wanted to see blood, but being that. I
as a hunter, without being having a blood trailing dog of my own, I have always ran on last blood.
Yep.
Well, last blood at this point was at the riverbed.
Yep.
So I don't trust. I need to get myself to, but I cannot yet trust. The dog completely.
Even my word.
You can't.
Well, no, even my
even
word.
Your word, I
you
can't.
Couldn't trust it that no, night. And I understand where you're coming from, but that's the thing that people do not realize is how many... We track more deer in one season than most people see in their lifetime.
Yep.
So, I mean, and that's the thing they don't realize is we see so many blood trails and so many not blood trails that we find deer. So... And at that point, when I watched him walk away, Josh didn't get to really see him like I seen him. And I told Josh, I said, we need to leave. Well, let's just, I'm like, dude, no. I finally convinced him we need to come back tomorrow morning.
I wanted blood.
Yeah.
I just did, as a person who tracks a lot of deer just off of the blood and not having a dog come in, I wanted last blood. We didn't have it at that riverbed. Mm-hmm. That deer could have jumped straight into the river and been floating down it for all we knew.
And this was all the thoughts going in your head.
These are all the thoughts as the hunter, yep. As the person who decided to take that shot and put an arrow and possibly wound or kill this deer. That was my thought, is that deer is either floating down the river dead and I'm never going to get him. Which doesn't make me feel any better. Yeah. Or he's across here in this wooded area that is luckily not swamped at that point in time. But I had to trust you and I had to trust the dog. The dog can't say anything to me because I do not know that dog myself. Yeah. But you do.
And that's where, you know, me and Kate have a working relationship with that dog and we know... her reactions and how she acts when she gets on deer, you know, and that's one thing that's probably as a tracker, you have to learn that with a seasoned dog and owner is you get that relationship with that dog and you know how she is. There's times I get to a track that people are like, and I'm like, they're like, oh, this deer's dead. And I'm like, man, from what my dog's telling me, this deer ain't dead. And then guess what? 2 weeks later, the people send me a picture. Hey, he's not dead. And I'm like, my dog told me. I'm just going off what my dog tells me. And that's what I was trying to tell Josh that night. I said, dude, just trust me. I said, that was
a different relationship.
Yeah.
It's a different relationship. I've known this dog since she was a puppy.
Yep.
But I don't spend every waking minute behind this dog.
Yeah.
So.
I got scars to prove it.
long story short, we left it. Yep. I wanted to continue forward. Clint kept telling me, do not go any farther forward. And we could, we could see the deer the whole time.
Yeah, because
we were talking about
this. Yes, because he basically walked straight away from us.
Walked.
And he got far enough to where he felt comfortable because he was hurt. And he turned basically around and was like looking at us.
But he was probably, I don't know.
He was 80, 90 yards. I think on the maps, I like yardaged it. And I think it was right under 100 yards he was away from us.
So we backed out.
Yeah. Reluctantly, you backed out.
Reluctantly, I backed out. I did not sleep that night. And we met up at 9 o'clock,
because we wanted to give people time to hunt in the morning.
I think it was 10 then.
Yes, it was 10.
It was probably 10 o'clock, because I said that. I said, I want to give... we knew there was other people hunting that.
Yeah.
We saw people hunting it the night before.
Yep.
We saw the trucks.
So we wanted to give
them
time.
And I'm not going
to
wreck everybody else's day, but at the same point, as the hunter, the man who decided to take that shot, wanted to find out if this deer was going to be eaten by coyotes or if I was going to be the one to pick him up.
Yeah. Now, on another tidbit, kind of go back to where we set up, where we came in to go get this deer, there was a trail, and we knew the trail was there.
It was a human trail.
It was a human trail, and we knew it was an easier way to get in there, so we ended up taking that way. Well, on the way in there, we proceeded to see what? There was like 5 or 6
so
scrapes.
Many scrapes.
You know, and that right there told me that we were set up, where we set up was almost perfect. Granted, we didn't know that at the time because we were playing the wind.
We hadn't scouted it.
Yeah. We were playing the wind too, because if we would have came in that way, he would have been gone.
Yeah. Had we have come in on the typical human access point,
yep,
he would have smelled us from the get-go, and yep, then we probably never would have killed him.
But like I said, though, I mean, we're pushed up, and everything that we seen on the map, it really concreted it in my mind that, wow, I actually was looking at that map, and I did, you know, it wasn't just a lucky shot on my part as far as picking that spot, because it confirmed for me when we seen all those scrapes led all the way up to where that deer went down in that bottom. I mean, it was perfect.
Basically, if you drew a straight line from where I killed him to where he ended up eventually dying,
yep,
it was a torn up area of buck sign.
Yep.
But so we get back together. We had Steve. We had my son, Carter.
Joe.
Kate, Clint, and my brother, Joe. Because we knew, ultimately, going in, if all things worked out, which we thought they should, that deer was dead.
Yep.
And we left him, and he wasn't going to make it to the river.
Yeah, because we got out of there, I think it was close to midnight, a little after midnight.
And we had marked out where he was on the map. Yep. I believe he was, at that point, within 150 yards. 150 yards from the river.
Yep.
Which would, he wouldn't have made it across it.
No, he wouldn't have.
So we called in the recruitments. Called in Joe, called in Steve Thomas, called in my son, and we all went out there to get this thing
all together with
Sandy. And we walked across, again, in daylight. We crossed this creek. We didn't find any blood.
Nope.
I think there was one speck
on the other side
I put the arrow on.
On the other side of the creek.
On the other side of the creek
that
told us he was going that direction.
That's the way he went. And it was in line of where he stood up and walked away from me. But we get over there, and so I told Josh, I said, Josh, stay here. I said, stay here with everybody right where I kind of seen where he got up. And
because we had such a large group, it was just easier to let Sandy work and do her job.
And at that point, the large group was mostly because we had a high anticipation of dragging the deer out of
there in the morning. My thought as a tracker that I knew this deer was dead. It like I said at the beginning, it was a matter of time. So we get over, me and Sandy start going, and she goes right back to where we pretty much seen him standing. Me and Josh were watching him at like you know, roughly 100 yards away, and she's kind of going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And she goes,
I'm standing back.
He's standing back.
At the creek bed with Kate and with Joe and with Steve and with Carter.
So,
and Clint is just walking.
I'm walking. And so, sure enough, me and Sandy are going back, and she kind of goes back to the west. And then all of a sudden, I see the deer, and Sandy's, like, on it. So, I was like, all right. So, I pull her off. I didn't say anything to Josh. I walked back to Josh. I'm like, shaking my head. I'm like, dude, I said, I don't know.
He headed to the river.
I said, he headed to the river. I said, I don't know, but if you take Sandy, she'll take you right to him.
And I wish we had the video camera going that whole time because, yeah, that was what it was. I don't know. He's headed right to the river. But if you just let Sandy take you, she'll take you right to him. And it took me a second because I'm like, wait a minute. Now, you just said that he was headed to the river, but she'll take me to him.
No. You said, he's dead? He's dead? And I was like, yeah, he's over here, man.
So, I mean, we ended up finding that deer.
And everything that happened right there is, to me, that is the epitome of hunting. All that.
It was awesome.
It was. I mean, just.
It sucked.
It sucked, but it was the highs and lows. It was everything. And it's all the memories that we will have those for the rest of our lives.
And me and Sandy and Clint and Kate have been through those highs and definitely those lows without ever having a high again.
Yeah.
The biggest buck.
Yep.
Probably still the biggest buck had I have gotten him.
Yep.
We tracked for 8 hours.
Yeah.
That I hit a twig. It set my arrow high. And the neighbor a mile up the road shot him, what,
2 weeks?
Days
it was
later?
2 weeks later during gun season.
Chasing does.
Chasing does, yeah.
Whatever it was, brother-in-law Steve, he worked with the guy who shot him.
Yeah.
And it had my arrow hole in him. But at a certain point, we were... God, what were we on that track? Probably 800 to 1,000 yards into it.
Easy.
And you guys said, we're done. This deer's not dead.
Yep. Just the way he was acting and what we seen. I mean, just.
Gosh, we were so.
We were green then, too.
Yeah,
but you tracked another deer for me that year. That was that 5-point.
Yeah.
Because I'm not. I'm 32 years old. I'm not above shooting what gets my heart going.
And what fills your freezer, though,
too. And what fills my freezer. And
at the end of the day, if mama ain't got meat to eat, she's going to be mad. But all in all, I mean, that was the whole thing. We came into that place, we were running and gunning, and the equipment we were using was what really made that. I mean, because you would have never got in that tree you were in a climber.
I never would have been in that area.
Yeah.
There just wasn't the option.
Because, granted, there was a lot of oaks, but the oaks that were in there were all
younger.
Were the younger oaks, but they were all leaning oaks.
Yep.
So you had a lot of like split base oaks. So they were, if you got on a climber, there's no way that you could have climbed it safely and been up in there.
You know, I used to run a climber. You used to use a climber. But trading to a couple sticks and a hang on stand has allowed us to get in trees no matter where it is.
Yeah.
Because number one, I don't care about the height anymore, as I stated to begin with. I don't care about the height. When we went to get this deer, I handed my bow to you out of my tree stand.
And I'm only 5'8", so it's not like I'm 6'3" or 6'4".
So this tree stand was 10.
You could reach it with your hand.
So it was 8 or 9 feet high.
Yeah, it was not high at all.
But it was more about the cover.
Yeah.
And you're not going to, in my opinion, in a climber tree stand, get into a tree like we did. And we've done multiple times since then.
Yep.
You had a couple good hunts late season.
Yep.
Run and gun hunting.
Yep.
This was a piece of private land, but you ran... You run gun hunted it, hang and hunted it,
yep,
and you got yourself into deer.
Yep, a lot of deer.
And I just believe that for public land and even private land,
yep,
we, you know, you've got a big old buck.
I use my run and gun system on my private land.
Right.
You know?
You've got a big old buck that is on your trail cameras right now where you guys hunt the majority of the time. Mm-hmm. That honestly, the only way you're going to kill him is sneaking up on him and run and gun hunting him or getting lucky and having him follow a doe.
Yep.
Because you've seen it for how many years now? Five years.
And I've moved cameras trying to get him, you know, more often, or, you know, and it's just, it's one of those things, you just see him every once in a while.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure I've seen him one time last year.
Kate. Screwed it up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Go that's ahead. For another Go one. Ahead. No, tell it. No. Tell it. Because you hanging hunted that set.
Yep.
That was horrible. I felt so bad.
So a lot of times I'll hunt, or like vice versa. She hunts or I'll hunt, but I hunted and
it's a long walk back there.
Yeah, so I decided to hunt
3/4 of a mile back into the back of that.
So I'm hunting and it's like, I mean, it's close. I mean, it's like prime time, and I had a couple littler bucks come through, and all of a sudden I heard something further up.
Now on this property, you typically how many tree stands do you have set up? Five.
Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4. Actually, right now, I only have 4.
But those are the stands that you typically hunt. Yes. Have you ever, out of those 4 stands that you've always had up, seen this buck?
No.
Seen a big buck? Like this buck's caliber?
No. No.
No.
No.
So, go ahead.
So,
I'm
hanging hunt, and I knew this... I'm pretty sure it was the same buck because this buck was huge. And when I seen him, like, my knees were knocking. It was that, I mean, because I stood up and turned around to see what was coming, and I heard it. It was up on the hill. It was probably 80 yards away at that time.
So you hear crunching.
I hear crunching, and it's quiet.
But at the same time,
but
you hear.
Well, no, I heard my phone going off, like vibrating. Mm-hmm. So I'm like,
that would have been me.
And I have my bow in my hand, mind you, and this deer's still coming. It took him almost 30 minutes to get to me.
Yeah.
And this is
in close, a distance of
80 yards. Mm-hmm. It took him about 30 minutes. I mean, he would stop, look, and I got my bow in my hand the whole time. Well, by this time he's probably like 40 yards. Well, he's coming in where I'm not expecting to come in, and it's pretty thick back there. So I knew where he was coming, and I'm like ready. I mean, he was coming that way. I would have had a shot. Put it this way, I would have had an arrow in him
about 5 minutes earlier.
Yeah. So, granted, and I'm fighting the time on the clock for dark or whatever, and
legality.
And about that time, all of a sudden, I see him shoot his head up and look out into the field, and I'm like, "What's he doing?" And sure enough, I turn around.
Now, wait just a second here. Your property that you, the private property that you hunt that this deer is on.
Yeah.
How many acres?
It's 40 acres.
And it's probably 30 of field?
It's probably closer to 20, 25. Well, 25 of field.
So you only have roughly 15 acres of wood. Timber to be able to hunt. If you do not want to hunt the field.
Yes, exactly.
Which we all know.
You can hunt the field, but you ain't going to see the deer you're going to see in the woods.
This is in Iowa.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. So he looks up, shoots his head up, and looks, and I'm like, what the hell is he looking at? So, you know, I'm trying not to get busted by him. Because, I mean, by that time, he's probably about 40 yards, but I ain't got a shot on him. But if another 10 yards, and I could have had him. So about that time, I look, and I just kind of glance over real slow, and I see headlights coming. And about that time, that's when the truck tops the hill, and he turns and goes and runs. I'm like, and it is what it is. If I had answered her, but I couldn't have got my phone out, and, you know, it was one of those things. And she's like, why don't I just come pick you up? I was like, I didn't say anything. I just shook my head.
Yeah, you were real quiet. I was like, what the heck?
That's where you should have stopped, Kate. When we're not answering our phone, you don't keep bothering us, and you stop at the road. So but, Kate was on her way in to pick you up a little before the end of time.
Yeah. And it was, it was one of those things. It's just like, I'd rather have had that than me miss him, though. Because I would have, I've missed deer, and you
know, I
would
have laughed at you.
That's all right. That's what we're here for. That's what family's for. To make everybody feel good.
So, but
I would have never seen him.
You wouldn't have seen him from one of your set stands. No.
I would have, but I would have never ever got a shot at him.
Because of the location.
The location, exactly.
The right tree, the right spot.
Because I knew I had him on camera going up to the front. And that's what I was trying to cut off, and my stands were not in that area. So I was like, well, I'll just bring the running gun system, set up, get into where I want. And sure enough, like I said, I mean,
sometimes that's all it takes, yeah. That little bit of switch to get yourself in the right position.
And that's the benefit to a running gun system. I mean, even on private, I mean, that's the thing. It's like you can always have your set stands that are in there, but those deer are not stupid.
No,
plain and simple. I mean, okay, yeah. It takes you, what, 10 minutes to set it up? Okay, granted, it only takes you 3 minutes to climb up to your stand that's already there, but...
But is your stand always in the right location, or did the deer already figure out that location?
Exactly, and because that's...
Because that's the thing that we found out on my 38-acre lease. You can go into that stand as many times as you want, and yeah, you might kill those or year-and-a-half-old bucks.
But those big...
Even those year-and-a-half-old bucks will stop where you walked in and start to sniff it.
Yep.
They might not care as much, but when you get a 3-4-year-old buck crossing that path one time...
Now, when you miss that your biggest buck, well, I mean, you hit that branch, you were, granted, you weren't in a running gun system, but you were in your climber in a tree that you'd never been in before.
Yep.
You know, and it is also preference. I mean, you can do what you... can with a climber, but to me,
you have limitations.
You have limitations to what you can do.
And once you get on, and you know, everybody I think will probably feel the same way. On private land, you start to figure out where the deer are. That's where your tree stands are.
Yep.
You go in there today. You go in there tonight. You go in there tomorrow. You go in there tomorrow night. Hang and hunt setups. I don't care if I've seen deer here every day. Tomorrow, I might be 20 yards closer, and that's all the difference it'll take. Because once those deer start to figure out your trail, your scent, and where you are, which we've seen so many times, where they will walk in, even if you don't have a tree stand in that same spot this year, but you have the past couple of years, what does that first big mature doe come do? Whips her head up.
What are you
doing? Looks right up in there.
It's
and
like,
says,
really? Come on.
That's where there's always been somebody.
Well, I mean, if you think about it like this, even like with a permanent stand, like think about it the first time you move it, how many deer you see? Because it's in a new spot. The deer don't know. It's the same thing with running gun. It's just easier to do it.
Well, I had that on that 38 too. I had a tree stand that was 18 foot high. That was my bottom stand. You had that stand a lot of times.
Yep.
It was at the very bottom of two ridges, and it was a perfect little pinch. They all walked through it.
Yep.
But when it was 18 foot high, and I shot, I don't even know how many does out of there in 4 years, what did every deer start to do? They knew that area. They knew that spot. They knew that area was dangerous.
I'd watch them walk up on that ridge
up
and
around
walk right
you.
In.
Instead of taking the natural path,
yep.
They would walk around you. I moved that tree stand 6 screw-ins higher. This was private land, so screw-ins were legal. So another 10 feet, 12 feet maybe. And we killed a lot of deer out of that tree stand afterwards because they did not seem to notice you being up so high. Granted, down in that bottom, you were limited to options of being way up or not having any cover.
Yeah.
That's how that property was set up. There wasn't a lot of oaks. It had been select cut. I think the year before my last year being there, they had come in and select cut it.
Yeah, they did. I remember
and it
that.
Really screwed it up. But when you're 10 feet higher... The difference to me is constantly changing your setups. And on public land especially, where these deer are, a lot of these deer are used to constantly crossing human paths. But when it's a human path going in the same spot, in and out, every day, and those bucks, especially the bigger ones that travel through here at night, they pick up on that.
Yeah.
And that is what I feel has been a very big part of me killing my two biggest bucks ever is just constantly being in a different area where they're not suspecting you, and they haven't ever seen anybody else.
Well, it's just like, for instance, when you shot your 7-point last year, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we said, I mean, I'd never been there. You guys had scouted it. You guys had scouted it. We were going out there with Josh, his dad, and his older brother, Ryan. And we all set up. They had already had their spots where they were going to set up. So I sat there and told him, I said, I seen a little spot. I said, I'm just going to sit over here on this little ridge, you know. And it looked good because there was some oaks up on top. And then it dropped down into these pines. It was real. It was a transition line right there. So I get set up, and it's maybe 30 minutes in, 40 minutes in. And here comes a buck. And it's, he was a year and a half old. Just a little guy. I'm like, all right, well, and he comes up and he's feeding the whole time to me, just, you know, and I just picked that spot because I seen that the transition line, and I seen it was a wider point on this transition line, and when I got up there, it even looked even better because of the oaks that were up there. I mean, and you could see that there was deer crap everywhere up there.
And the scrape line was
right, yeah, the scrape line was right on that edge, and I was like, all right, well, it wasn't 5 minutes of that little buck being up there eating, here comes the 7-point. It comes right up, and I got my bow in my hand. I'm like, I'm at deer camp, mind you. I'm like, no. I'll.
And this is an APR zone.
Yeah, APR zone.
Four on one side.
Yeah, it had four on one side, and I was like,
no. Actually, I think up there it's a three on one side.
Yeah, it's three on one side. Yes.
I don't remember.
I can't remember, but it had four on one side, so it was good either way. I knew that. So, and I'm like, it's early. I'm going to let him walk. So I let him walk, and sure enough.
He walked right to me.
All of a sudden I hear, thwap. And I'm like, you just killed him, didn't you? He's like, dead. That's all I get back, dead.
But that deer, there was no tree stands in there. Mm-mm. There was no ladder stands in there. There was no ground blinds in there, even made out of logs that we had seen. Unsuspecting.
Yeah. I could have smoked him. Like, he had no idea.
At 10 yards.
At 10, I mean, he walked, like, he was, I thought he was going to hit that other buck and chase him off. Yeah. That's what I thought. And he just, and he walked right behind me, did not have a clue I was there. And I was maybe 15 feet in the air.
But you would have been either hunting a wide open pine at that point.
Yep.
Or a skinny popple.
No, and I'm not getting in a poplar or a pine because my fat ass, it ain't.
It's going to be
Josh is like, out. I was like, where were you? He's like, I was in a pine tree. I'm like, are you nuts? He's like, it's pine.
It was the only spot I could hunt, though, right at that transition. Yeah. So you've been running gun hunting. You said XOP.
XOP with XOP sticks.
Yep, with four XOP sticks. If you're given the choice, tomorrow you got to go kill a deer. Are you going to take a climber, or are you going to take a climb on, or a hang on, and why?
Well, I'm going to come over to your house, grab your lone wolf, and no.
Mine's off limits. It's in the back of my truck at work.
No, I would definitely go with a hang on. I mean, you know, the running gun system. I mean, I would, because it's versatile. Just for the simple fact is I've been that guy out in the woods and being like, I want to be in that tree.
But I can't.
But I can't, so I'm looking up in the air, I'm like, where's the tree that I'm going to get in? And that's what if you have a climber, you've been in that situation where you get out and you're like, man, that looks really good right there. But you're like, the closest tree is 50 yards away.
Well, and how many times, too, have we been up in climbers and we've said, I need to go 30 yards that way? But you can't.
You can't.
Because in a climber, there's no tree 30 yeah. yards that way.
It's the versatility of being able to be in that crooked-ass tree. Mm-hmm. That has 80 limbs on it. I mean, it is. I mean, it's just, if you look, go out in the woods and look. And look what tree has the most cover. A straight tree, the only way you're going to have cover is if that deer comes in straight at you and you're in line with that tree and that deer never turns or never comes to your right or left.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time. And then as soon as you get an arm out or something, that deer's going to be like, whoa, what's that? You know? I mean, it's just, when you have that versatility of being out in a tree, any tree you want, I mean, even if it's not a safe tree, I mean, you could still be in it. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's
and we aren't supported by XOP. We aren't backed by Lone Wolf.
Nothing. We're just average Joes.
What we are comfortable with in these situations and budgets allowed. I bought my Lone Wolf, like I said, after selling 16 tree stands, I bought my Lone Wolf setup.
Yeah. I bought mine. A guy was selling it last year on Marketplace, and I didn't care what it was. Mm-hmm. I honestly didn't. Your brother, Joe runs XOP.
Yep.
And he liked it, and this one was a little bit bigger than I wanted, but the price was right, so I was just like, hey.
And for you, it's probably about the right size. I mean, granted, yeah, you could sit in my Lone Wolf all the time, but yep, the XOP that you have is the biggest one
offer. I like it because I have a big platform.
Well, and I even said last year up north, I'm like, man, you carry all that? Like, it's just whatever fits you, but yep, for me too, I will never, ever purchase another climber. The only time I might consider it is when Carter or Owen or Liv decide that they want to go sit in a tree with me the way I do it.
Yeah.
And granted, I probably still will buy another Lone Wolf at that point because it only take me another 2 minutes to hang a second tree stand in the same tree.
And that's one thing, as big as you said my stand was, and you're like, yep, you carry all that, it still is not as awkward is carrying a climber out.
Yep.
It still is not. It's not as wide. I mean, it's probably 8 to 9 inches narrower than a climber. So
less,
I mean,
hollow.
Less hollow. You don't hear the clunk, 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 clunk. Yep. I mean, it's nice. I mean, even setting it up, like I can hit it against a tree and it doesn't go clink, you know, like most climbers do. So, I mean, that there, to me, being quiet, you can never put a climber in a stand and climb it and be quiet. I mean, it just...
So, obviously, you know, everybody's going to use what their budgets allow.
And they're comfortable with.
And what you're comfortable with. Those summit climbers, I tell you what, if you want to be comfortable hunting all day, a summit Goliath for a 180-pound person will do you perfectly. Because yeah, I did more sleeping than I did hunting out of those. The difference is availability of hunting locations.
Yep.
Choices. You with a hang and hunt, hang on tree stand, couple sticks, I'm not picky about the tree. I'm picky about the location.
Yep.
I wanted to be even pickier with the saddle, and we can get into that at another time. Right now, my choice is going to be my hang and hunt setup. So my choice is going to be 4 Lone Wolf sticks, and there's a lot of times where I might not use all 4. You've seen me use 2, you've seen me use 4. But availability of cover is more important to me than height. And, I mean, that's just where I'm at anymore. And I believe that to be a Michigan, because that's the only stance I could take is Michigan. I've never been out of state. To be an effective Michigan
state land
public land hunter, you need to have the availability and the options of going wherever you want and hunting high or low, wherever the cover is. But being in the best tree location at the time is bigger than being up high. It's bigger than anything.
Yeah.
So having the availability of going anywhere you want on public land, hunting any tree, whether you're stick high or 4 sticks high, is going to be a better option, in my opinion, than having a climber that you can only climb straight trees. Yep.
And it's not so much that we're dogging like climbers, and that's not what we're doing. What we're saying is like, in our opinions, like, you need to be where the deer are. And if you can't find a tree because of the stand that you, or the equipment that you're using, that's a problem. You know, and in Michigan, you need to be where the deer are. Because if any state, you need to be where the deer are. Because if you're not, guess what? You ain't going to shoot anything.
Right.
So, and that's my, I agree with you on that. If you're not, if you can't be where you want to be, it's hard.
Well, to wrap it up, Kate and Clint, thank you very much for always being there with Sandy the tracker when I've needed her. I've needed her a couple times. I haven't needed her a couple times when you guys have wanted to track. And it's always good to have that option of having a tracking dog on your side. So where can everybody find Sandy the Tracker if they want to contact you this year? what areas do you cover? I mean, obviously everybody knows we're in Michigan, so do you cover certain areas, or, you know, what is the cost of having a tracking dog?
So the easiest way to get a hold of us or to look us up is on Facebook. Look up Sandy the Tracker. Send us a message on the page. It'll go straight to Clint or I.
Yep.
Either one of us will answer any questions you have. As far as price-wise goes...
We're pretty reasonable. Usually we start, it's a mileage thing for us. That's what we do. Of course, if the further away, we'll travel anywhere. If you're paying, we're traveling. I mean, it's plain and simple. I mean, I've had a guy in Ohio that wanted me to come, and I said, look, man, I told him, like, this is what it's going to be, you know. He's like, I don't care. He goes, I want you to come. Well, it didn't work out, but anyways, it's just, you know, we basically, if you're 60 miles or what is it, 30? Yeah, 30 miles or closer, it's 120. And then after that 30 miles, it's basically by the mile. So it's not any extra for there for 4 hours. You know, we do our due diligence to make a hunter happy, you know. And what I mean by that is...
we will exhaust all...
all options as far as, you know... like I said, Sandy, when I get on a track, Sandy knows usually if the deer's dead or not. So a lot of times I can get out there and within a couple, 20, 30 minutes, I can usually tell a hunter, hey, this isn't looking good, or hey, this is looking pretty good, you know? I mean, it depends. So, but like I said, we try to be reasonable, and there's no extra cost if we find your deer or if we don't, because some people do that. But no, it's a flat rate, and we'll travel anywhere. I mean, Indiana, I don't care. I mean, we'll go. If you're paying, we're going. So that's kind of how we are.
And if that deer is dead, I can vouch Sandy will find it. Whether she has to get downwind of it to smell it or on the blood trail, Sandy has found a lot of deer. So Sandy the Tracker on Facebook.
Yep.
Look them up. Kate and Clint, I appreciate you guys being here with us for the last over an hour of your night. You know, we hunt a lot, so there should be hopefully more of this coming.
Yep.
Clint and I, at least, talking about our hunts this year. We've got some.
I'm excited.
It's starting to look like a good year. I mean, I'm going to go kill that 10 point off your property.
Oh, that's fine. Hey, I'd be happy. I'd be a little jealous.
Somebody's
got to
get them eventually. I know. But we appreciate everybody listening. And as always, if you haven't subscribed to our podcast, our YouTube, even follow us on Facebook, Instagram, it's all Overdrive Outdoors. Our YouTube got changed around a little bit. If you look on YouTube and you see our Coyote logo, that is the page we need your subscriptions at, is that one, not the old Overdrive Outdoors YouTube channel. Look for the new one, and hopefully we'll be putting down a couple more on footage this year.
Yeah.
Out of run and gun setups on Michigan Public, and we'll probably have Sandy involved in a couple of them as well.
Yeah, and topics you guys want to hear or something like that too.
Yeah, if there's anything you guys want to hear, you know, or want us to talk about or questions answered, please send us into them. Subscribe to the podcast, and we'll look forward to talking to you guys at a later date. Thank you very much.